and it really is a great pleasure to be here with CEDA. I too would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we are gathered here today, and I'd pay my respects to their elders past and present, and the elders from any other communities who may be here today. It's great to be here. It's great to be in a position to talk about the vitality and the economic resurgence that is going on in the state of Victoria. Thanks, of course, to Melinda and to Michael for hosting today. I also would like to acknowledge a couple of my parliamentary colleagues who are with us here today. My parliamentary, parliamentary secretaries in Frank McGuire and Steve Demopoulos. Steve is my parliamentary secretary and doing a very good job. Now, I don't normally take the opportunity to put a shout out to my staff, my former staff and my actual staff. You don't see a lot of gratitude coming from politicians, but I'm feeling a little bit precious at the moment with us right in the heat of the white hot heat of developing a budget, and they're my arms and legs, and without them, well, we wouldn't be in the position we are today. So thanks for your contribution. This is also, I think, an ideal opportunity to outline the strength of the Victorian economy and how we're travelling as a state. If you only listen to property pundits, you'd be forgiven for thinking it was all doom and gloom. Now, I, by natural disposition, am a pessimist. I'm not a lot of fun to have a drink with. The Premier describes me as the Eeyore of politics, and somebody's got to fill that role, I got to tell you. But let me assure you, there is more to our economy than just the property market. Victoria's performance in recent years has led the nation with above-trend economic growth, low unemployment, strong business investment, and an infrastructure pipeline that continues to drive a thriving construction industry. In fact, today, about 1 in 10 jobs in the Victorian economy are in the construction industry. But today, I really want to talk about three things in particular. How far Victoria has come since we were first elected in November 2014. The Victorian economy today and what it means for this year's budget. And finally, how we're building the foundations for long-term economic growth. I think it's easy to forget that when we were first elected in 2014, there was a jobs crisis. Unemployment peaked at 7%. Many people had stopped looking for work and had fallen out of the labour market. Today, the unemployment rate sits at 4.5%. In regional Victoria, the story's even better, where the rate is 4.4%, the lowest regional unemployment rate in the nation. We've also seen the participation rate at record highs in recent years, with more and more people entering and staying in the Victorian labour market. All up, Damien, you start accounting a little late. All up, since we were elected, more than 440,000 new jobs have been created in this state. More than 70% of those jobs are full-time jobs. Now, that bucks a decade-long trend towards insecure employment. And it probably speaks volumes about where the employment growth is coming through in the economy and the role that the state has played in facilitating some industry growth. We've created the strongest labour market in the country, with jobs growth well in excess of population growth. And I think that's an important point for those who feel they might be losing out as a consequence of population growth, of migration to the state. In fact, what we're seeing is our growth, our population growth is being outstripped by jobs growth. In fact, that's edging towards 500,000 more Victorians now in work, each with their own story, each with their own unique circumstances and contribution that they can make to the state. And achieving each individual's potential and their capacity to constructively contribute to the Victorian economy is vitally important to this government. I often say, when you want to know what motivates this government, if you want to work on your pitch to government, talk to us about jobs, because we understand that if we can create employment, then we create opportunity for the whole community. Since the November 2014 election, Victoria's contributed almost 37% of national employment growth, well above our share of the national population. This jobs boom hasn't happened by accident. It's because we've created the right environment for business to invest, to expand, and of course, to hire. We've ensured that businesses have access to the skilled workers they need, and that our infrastructure is fit for a 21st century economy. That's why we're investing and have invested in intergenerational infrastructure projects, including Metro Tunnel, level crossing removal programs, the West Gate Tunnel. The colossal scale of these projects is obvious to all, and sometimes a little bit overawing for me. They will completely change the way we travel, the way we work, in fact, the way we live. All up, government infrastructure investment is projected to reach $13.4 billion in 2018-19, the average of $10.6 billion a year over the budget and forward estimates, more than doubles the 10-year average before we were elected. That means jobs, over 75,000 of them, for engineers, apprentices, for labourers, for talented, hard-working Victorians to help to build our state and their futures along with it. Today, one in 10 workers in the state is employed in the construction sector. With all this investment and activity, it's no surprise that we're the best performing economy in the nation. But how far we have come in a little over 4 years. That's not just my opinion, it's backed up by numbers. Our economy has grown at above trend rate for the past 4 years, increasing by an annual average rate of 3.5%. That's well above the comparable national increase of 2.6% per annum. Since we were elected, the Victorian economy has grown by more than $50 billion in real terms. While there's been talk of a per capita recession, the latest state data shows that Victoria again bucks the trend. On a per capita basis, the economy has grown in each of the past 4 years, at an average rate that's more than double that under the previous state government. That directly translates to an improved standard of living for Victorians. Indeed, in 2018, Victoria's annual wage growth outpaced all the other states. We've overseen the strongest economy in the nation while endeavouring to ensure no worker and no community is left behind. It's why last term we invested $13.6 billion in regional Victoria. Again, almost double the amount the previous coalition government managed in their 4 years. We've also focused on those communities that are disproportionately impacted by a transitioning economy. We've seen the closure of the Hazelwood Power Station, the Ford factories in Geelong and Broadmeadows, and Toyota's manufacturing plant in Altona. Now, nobody is arguing that this is anything other than a devastating situation for the individuals, the workers, their families, and for the communities. Every government witnesses these major disruptions to industries and communities. It's how we respond to it that I think helps define this government's priorities and, can I say, their empathy for the circumstances that many workers and communities find themselves in. How they respond to economic upheaval speaks volumes. It reflects not only where their heart lies, but their willingness to innovate, adapt, and look to the future. Rather than give up on these workers, we've capitalised on their remarkable range of skills, and we've ensured that they're not left hanging in a rapidly changing economy. We're working with communities as their local economies transition, and it's producing results. In the Latrobe Gippsland region, for example, far from going backwards, we've seen 12,900 jobs created since we were elected, and the unemployment rate at an astonishing 3.5%. This blend of economic leadership, pragmatism, prudence, and empathy has been at the core of the four state budgets the government has handed down so far. Each budget has been distinct. Each has focused on delivering on commitments that we made to the Victorian people. They are an immutable rule for this government. If we make a commitment, we will honour it. And of course, each has reflected the prevailing economic conditions at the time. This year, there's been a lot of talk about softening property markets and revenue write-downs. But this has to be put into context. During the past 6 years, we've seen Victorian property prices soar by more than 50% at their peak. While dwelling prices in Melbourne are currently down 9.1% compared with a year ago, this is coming off a period of significant growth. But the fundamentals of the Victorian property market remain strong. We've got strong population growth, strong economic growth, low unemployment, and low interest rates. And of course, the government's record investments in infrastructure, schools, and hospitals all mean that Victorians continue to be prouder of their community, and Victoria is seen to be a great place to live, work, and raise a family. So I remain confident against my natural inclination most of the time on anything. I do remain confident that the recent drop in prices will moderate. I subscribe to the view. I was asked about 6 months ago, how long did I think the downturn in property markets would last? I'm going to be incredibly consistent. I said then 12 months, and I'm saying again now, 12 months, starting from today. pragmatic as well as confident. A weaker property market leads to lower tax revenue. That's pretty much well obvious. And states do have a structural problem. They are, particularly the eastern seaboard states, highly dependent upon property-related revenue. It's not only due to dwelling price declines, but also lower transaction volumes. No property boom can last forever, so we've planned accordingly. In the December budget update, we downgraded land transfer duty revenue forecast by $2.4 billion. It'll come as no surprise that we expect to make further significant write-downs in the upcoming budget. In addition to this revenue drop, we're also managing the Abbott-Turnbull-Morrison government's continued underinvestment in our state. These three Liberal Prime Ministers have three things in common. They're from Sydney, they can't find Victoria on a map, and they don't keep their promises. They've all refused to honour agreements struck with Victoria that would have provided a fairer share of funding to deliver essential services for our schools, our hospitals, and our infrastructure. The Commonwealth continues to shortchange Victoria. Which is why I again call for a mechanism that needs to be incorporated into our federal-state relations, a mechanism that essentially says, if we're all grown-ups in the room, let's have grown-up agreements, ones that are legally enforceable, ones that do not allow the Commonwealth to use its word and the commitments it makes to the states as effective budgetary balance. If they choose not to honour the agreements, if they choose, as they have at the moment, not to honour a four-year-old agreement and the National Disability Insurance Scheme and leave the states holding the can of $1.1 billion worth of transitional payments to some of our most exposed and vulnerable people in the community, that speaks volumes for their character and speaks volumes also about the way that they treat and regard states. We are not simply the service delivery agents under instruction from the Commonwealth. We have mandates and constituencies of our own, and we are very much committed to honouring the agreements that we make with the Commonwealth, which is why I honestly cannot understand how they can expect to have an ongoing and responsible arrangements with the states. As I've said, that $1.1 billion in disability funding is really more a demonstration of their priorities that the most vulnerable would be from an agreement made in 2015, honoured by the state and paid for by the state, ever since for the Commonwealth to be actively collecting the money through the Medicare levy, but yet not to provide one red cent to the state of Victoria, might I say other states as well, and then to say, well, the deal now is, unless you sign up to another deal on our terms, we won't honour the past one. Well, you call me silly from time to time, but I'm not that gullible that I'm going to enter into an agreement with a Commonwealth government that refuses to honour the previous one or the existing one. So the government, I think, has reneged on an agreement to support Victorians living with a disability in order to provide themselves with budgetary ballast. Well, can I be very clear? We're not going to cop it. We're not going to capitulate, nor will we seek to renegotiate an agreement with the Commonwealth until they honour the existing agreement. Regardless of who's in power in Canberra, can I say, we're going to make sure that Victorians get their fair share of funding. These write-downs in land transfer duty and the cuts from Canberra mean that this year's budget will require tough choices. And I'm not walking away from the need for good governments to be able to define themselves and cut their cloth to the temper of the times. Or is that a mixed metaphor? Call it what you will, a leaner budget, a tougher budget, but in no way will this budget deviate from our core values. It'll consolidate our investment, it'll deliver on our election commitments, and it'll continue to support those who need it most. Yes, we will provide services more efficiently, use our balance sheet effectively, and focus on delivering the things that matter most to our state. But we're not stopping. We'll keep building and we'll keep delivering the services our state needs. Those that most rely on the state for support can rest assured that we won't let them down and that this budget will not be delivered at their expense. We've never been a government that shies away from tough decisions. It's why we've maintained our fiscal discipline during times of prosperity to ensure that there's sufficient capacity to respond when economic conditions change. Indeed, the mid-year financial report released this morning confirms Victoria's diversified economy and the government's strong financial position leaves us well placed to manage unforeseen developments. Our approach to responsible budget management will continue and we will maintain our fiscal strategy and protect Victoria's prized AAA credit rating. Not just for what it means in terms of interest rates, because it's relatively marginal, but because of the discipline that it insists we apply to ourselves and the way that we govern. As we made clear at the recent election, that means that we'll increase net debt to 12% of gross state product, but only to invest in economy-growing infrastructure, including North East Link, the Melbourne Airport Rail Link, and the next tranche of level crossing removals. So these infrastructure investments will boost the productive capacity of our state. It's just one example of how we're building the foundations for long-term economic growth. We are in an era of almost unprecedented social and technological change, driven by increased global competition and disruption. We always endeavour to be one step ahead of the game, but ensuring our economy is well placed to weather potential economic shocks. Despite our overall economic success, Victoria is facing challenges. With weak productivity growth in recent years, a challenge that most OECD countries are themselves grappling with, we must now look to how government can drive productivity growth in all sectors of the economy. It's why we recently invested in the biggest shake-up of vocational education and training in the history of this state, better aligning our workforce with the skills and the experience employers are demanding. It's why we've invested more than $10 billion in building the education state. This is about more than just building new schools and hiring more teachers, though we're certainly doing that. It's about ensuring our education system keeps pace with rapid economic and technological change. We're continuing to look at whether government regulation, and just as importantly, the regulators that enforce them, are achieving their objectives in a way that minimises the impact on business and supports innovation. With an annual budget of $70 billion, we must also look at how the government can be more productive in the ways it delivers infrastructure, health and education. Key among the challenges in boosting productivity is attracting overseas investment. Potential investors typically want to know there's a pool of dynamic, well-educated and skilled workers. They want to know that the infrastructure is world-class and that the economy is in safe hands. And perhaps most importantly, they want to know whether or not government is a willing partner. Victoria offers all of that and more. Since we were elected in 2014, the government has facilitated private investment projects valued at more than $9.2 billion in new capital investment. These projects are expected to create more than 25,000 full-time jobs. But global competition for investment capital is increasingly intense, with investors seeking cheaper opportunities in emerging economies. Around the world, there are more than 2,500 investment promotion agencies. Daunting as that sounds, the opportunities that are available to Victoria are enormous. As always, it's essential that we have a coordinated and an organised approach. It's also essential that we have a single entry point for potential investors, and it's vital that we use all the levers at our disposal to ensure that Victoria is an attractive investment proposition. That's why, following the election, we've established Invest Victoria as a new dedicated investment attraction agency. Invest Victoria will support me in my new role as Minister for Economic Development and will focus on attracting skills, capabilities and technologies to Victoria. It'll foster a strategic and a deeper engagement with industry, and it'll feature a broader range of financial programs to support investment, moving beyond just grant funding to ensure taxpayers are getting value for money. In recent years, a diverse range of international companies have based their regional activities in Victoria, including Alibaba, David Jones and Zendesk. In the past week alone, I announced two newcomers. First, Kaufland, the world's fourth largest retailer, who will make Victoria its centre of operations for the Asia-Pacific region, as well as establishing an initial six new stores across the state. It's expected to create something like 1,600 new jobs and inject hundreds of billions of dollars into our economy. And just this morning, I visited the Florey Institute of Neuroscience and Mental Health in Carlton to announce that Praxis Precision Medicines will be setting up base here in Victoria. Not only will this create more than 100 new jobs, it'll harness the best and brightest minds in Victoria to potentially improve the lives of millions of people around the globe. Now, it's a prime example of playing to our strengths and also bolstering areas where we already have a distinct competitive advantage. These announcements are just a snapshot of the immense opportunities that come with an agency such as Invest Victoria. In my role as Minister for Economic Development, I look forward to working with many of you here today to grow your businesses, to encourage investment and to create Victorian jobs. We want to build on the phenomenal economic and employment growth we've seen over the first 4 years of the Andrews government. That strong growth combined with responsible budget management means that we're well placed to not only weather the current property market downturn, but to lay the foundation for our future economic growth and vitality. That means that we will deliver our election commitments, including the biggest infrastructure program Victoria has ever seen. And might I say, also including strong and substantial budget surpluses now and going forward. That might be a rare occasion in Commonwealth parlance, but for this government and for this state, it will be a necessary precondition of the way that we operate. We'll keep on delivering the things that matter most to our state, because this is a government that delivers for all Victorians. Thank you very much.